I don't know if it's the weather. I don't know if it's been a very emotional and tiring week, but everyone on our team here on the show and some of our colleagues downstairs in what we call the pit where Barbara Friedman sits and all the other producers and presenters feel like this heaviness around us. I didn't get much sleep last night. I don't know if it was the flapping and the wailing of the wind, but I am here and I hope you bear with us. And we will bear with you. Your contribution to the show is very important. 021-446-0567. It is the open line throughout the show. But I want to reflect on that press conference. Tito Mboweni and the other members of the financial cluster briefing the country yesterday on where the country stands on social relief for people affected by COVID-19 and its lockdown. Tito Mboweni has always... He's always intimated that he doesn't really need this job as finance minister. In fact, he's been on record as saying so, that he would earn more sitting on boards of companies than he would be as a minister in cabinet. And because of this, Tito Mboweni does not need the job. So he's the perfect finance minister to make the very difficult decisions when it comes to the budget. He also can speak his mind on a fiscal policy perspective, you know, outside of the ANC. One could also argue that he tests the markets, so to say, for Cyril Ramaphosa when it comes to unpopular fiscal and financial decisions. But Tito Mboweni is also very flippant. He's also dismissive, I think, of the realities faced by many South Africans. I also think Tito Mboweni has room to be Mr. Unpopular, particularly within the ANC and with civil society here in South Africa, who have largely criticized him for the biggest budget cuts to social spending and health and education in the last 20 years. This is how Tito Mboweni has had to trim the South African budget. And so when he said yesterday that the policy discussion on a basic income grant must be made by future policymakers, he then simply just kicks the can down the road to possibly a time when he's no longer in cabinet. So he doesn't want to make the decision. He actually doesn't want it. And he said yesterday that South Africans, the poorest South Africans, shouldn't rely on grants, but rather employment, rather jobs. And yes, of course, Mr. Mboweni, a job is what unemployed South Africans want. A job would provide more income than a grant. But if the government that you are part of is not creating the space for work opportunities, meaningful work, long-term work, then what else must people rely on? And a basic income grant has shown time and time again around in countries around the world, developing economies, it has been shown to work. The wealthy grant system in South Africa is largely a success of the South African state. 18 million grants are currently issued. It doesn't mean 18 million people have access to grants, but 18 million grants are currently issued. It's about 12 million South Africans who actually receive those grants. 18 million grants for old age, disability, child support grants, and the poorest would be far worse off if those did not exist. So while Tito Mboweni proceeds with caution, I don't think this country has time, politically and from a humanitarian point of view, time to dilly on whether who should make that policy decision on whether to support the most vulnerable in South Africa. And we saw with the riots and the looting, wasn't the start, it wasn't the cause of the looting, but it played a role. The discontent, the hunger, the levels of poverty, it did play a role in those riots and looting of last week, 2 weeks ago. So later in the show, we are going to be speaking to the Institute for Economic Justice about why a basic income grant needs to be implemented now and not wait till when Tito Mboweni does not have his fingers on the state bank card. But I think this also bleeds into the louder and louder rumblings of a possible cabinet reshuffle. Refuel, we spoke about it this morning. Plenty of commentators also saying it's probably a likelihood. The president has the issue with a security cluster of ministers who have been found wanting in the last few weeks. We're also in the market for a new minister in the presidency following the passing of Jackson Mthembu last week. Kumbutso Ncaveni, the acting minister in the president, she's been doing quite admirably. And I think she should be elevated to that as a full-time position. Mamaloko Kubai Ngubane, I think she also needs to be rewarded. Noting that she's been in this job while waiting for Zweli Mkhize to decide whether he's on special leave or not. It's highly likely that he would probably be stepping aside permanently. What we're hearing about reports coming out of the Special Investigations Unit does not look good for Zweli Mkhize when it comes to digital vibes. And if Tito Mboweni is saying, well, the big decisions of a basic income grant policy must be taken by future policymakers and ministers, well, maybe that's just a hint that he won't be around much longer. But who replaces him? Who replaces possibly, and I stress possibly, ministers in the security cluster? And that's where you come in. If there was a cabinet reshuffle, who's in, who is out for you? 021-446-0567. I think we should also remember Cyril Ramaphosa is also building forward to a coalition for when the ANC's elective conference comes around. That's next year, 2022. It happens, goes quite quickly the last 5 years. Cyril Ramaphosa needs to build a coalition of leaders in the ANC for him to be elected to a second term, and then thereby possibly a second term as president of the country. It's highly likely that will happen. He has neutralized that RET faction in the ANC, but who does he build that with? It's with the ministers who are currently in, the people currently in the ANC. But I'm also wary of that thread of thought that says Cyril Ramaphosa is the only one in the ANC and in this country who can lead and who can save us. I don't think we should be hero worshipping. I don't think we should be creating heroes and villains. And that is what we have been doing over the last 3 or 4 years. But your thoughts, 021-446-0567. Drop me a WhatsApp, 072-567-1567. Kevin in Berkeley, good morning. How are you?
Yes, I just want to say, with the universal basic income, whether people realize it or not, this is something that is going to have to be addressed on a global scale sooner or later. And the fact is, as technology takes over most jobs, even so-called highly skilled labor, such as surgeons, how are people, what are people going to do? So this is an issue. The sooner governments, and not just South Africa, globally, deal with it and accept that people don't have to work, okay, the sooner we'll be better off. Because I tell you, the day that happens, I don't want to be on this planet.
Look,
I really don't.
We've just seen it in the last 2 weeks here in South Africa, Kevin. Just, it wasn't the start, it wasn't the cause, it wasn't the reason that we had looting and violence 2 weeks ago, but it did play a role. People opportunistically, you know, going into a store, into a mall, and whether they, you know, found a packet of rice or whether they found a shirt, that was something that they needed at the moment. And the high level of poverty and unemployment in South Africa did contribute to that.
Yes, and it's not just South Africa. It's the United States, the so-called developed world, too. Okay, and the fact is, countries that implemented it, like Sweden or Iceland, they're relatively stable and doing quite well. Not to say they don't have their problems, but it's not on the scale of, you know, a South Africa or the United States. You know, this puritanical work ethic thing has got to go.
Definitely. Kevin Berkeley, thank you so much for the call. 021-446-0567. You can add your voice to this conversation.
Cape Talk. Cape Talk. WhatsApp Leicester.
072-567-1567.
Hi, Lester, this is Andre. Listen, decent jobs. Please define decent jobs. The ANC's Freedom Charter also says that everybody must get decent jobs. And on the basis of that, they scrapped the apprenticeship system. Surely working with your hands and feeding yourself and digging in the soil, planting and harvesting the fruits of your own labor is decent work. Where do we go with decent jobs? Is that sitting behind a computer and playing cards during the day and then going home and getting paid? Is that also decent work? I think not.
When I refer to a decent job, decent work, I'm thinking of something that's more than just a work opportunity. I'm thinking of something that is more than just a road upgrade where we then just bring in people from a local community and they'll have a job for forever long that this project is being underway, and it's either people being physically involved or it's people or it's someone who's just waving the flag or the lollipop telling cars to slow down. But once that project is over, that job is gone. That's why it's called a work opportunity. And it's, and when we talk about jobs and when our government talks about jobs and we talk about infrastructure programs, they don't say jobs. They say work opportunities. I think we really need to get to a point of decent and fixed work for so many people in South Africa. But Zingwe from Philippi is calling in. Good morning, Zingwe. How are you doing?
I'm right. How are you, Lester?
I'm good, my brother. You want to respond to what Matthew said before news at 10 o'clock?
Yes. I mean, what I heard what he said, but I mean, it was so disturbing. Because if he compares a human race to the animals in the bush, then what call the survival of the fittest, then he's wrong. Because it means everyone who is maybe injured or sick is not supposed to be treated. He's supposed to let die. Mm-hmm. Or else those children who are born premature, we don't need to take care of them. But some of them now are professionals, are professors or lawyers or doctors. But they were born premature and somebody took care of them. They never trust them to say, this would, they are not supposed to be born. They are too weak to survive. Mm-hmm. It's not about, only about money, as he's saying, or about productive. Even, in, mm-hmm. I mean, it's not like that. Because what I can say like this, I have seen so much talent. I've seen so much, professional dying in the eggs before they hatch because of lack of support or lack of opportunity. There have been so many musicians who are very young, and then they couldn't go anywhere because of lack of support. So you cannot trust them to say, no, you are failures, you are about to die because you are not productive. It's not their choice not to be productive, but they want the people like him to support those people.
And I'm sure, Zingwe, like me, I know of people and close familial connections who have made their way through school, or at least a parent who survives off some form of social grant, supporting a family where children make their way through school and with other support programs like NSFAS and bursaries and just working damn hard, also then get through university or college and get into fixed employment, you know, become part of a middle class, then to support other people as well. I know of plenty of people who have made their lives, who have made successes of themselves in whatever way you want to determine success. But they have created something out of being supported by some form of state grant.
Yeah, it's what, I think some people, somehow, what it is, just a little push. Somebody does some exploits that you wouldn't expect to come from that person. So a little help sometimes it does a lot. People think, people want to be bigger. There's no one who wants to be a beggar for life. How long can you be spoon-fed? No one likes to be that.
Zingwe, thank you so much for your call. Look, the way I see it, And I know a lot of people say about, and it's very much what we remember from a British dole system. What's it called? Benefits treats. There was even a reality TV show where they would go look for benefits treats. If a social grant is given to three people, two of those people really need it. They do something with it. They feed their families, and then they sustain themselves. And if the third person, if he is taking advantage of the system, that doesn't mean we still mustn't help them. We must help, even if that small few do take, and some of them may take advantage of the system, but that doesn't stop us from still seeing to the most vulnerable. But Sean in Weinberg, thanks so much for calling. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks, man. Yeah, I think I agree with your previous caller. I think Matthew's comment was quite weird and disturbing. Lester, I think that a lot of privileged South Africans who benefited from pre-94 forget that the apartheid system was a social welfare system. It gave white people a leg up in this country by providing them with basic needs, with jobs. And that is ultimately how they built wealth with black labor. So I don't understand why a lot of people who see the social grant through a privileged lens don't understand that perhaps their fathers and their grandfathers and their grandmothers and their mothers and grandmothers probably benefited from a similar system not too long ago.
We talk about affirmative action and employment equity in a new South Africa, in a post-94 South Africa. The exact opposite happened. There was an affirmative action, but for white people before 1994. Sean?
Now, Lester, sort of on that same topic, I think the quota system, and we know with rugby, you know, there are black players who are seen as quotas. The white players who played pre-94, they were the original quotas. You know, it's quite funny when people forget our history, and I think it's selective history that is a problem in South Africa, and no one wants to grapple with it because it's uncomfortable for people who benefited from it. Affirmative action is needed. There's this a cartoon, I think, where, you know, they kind of show people looking over a wall. And the guy in the business suit is standing on top of two boxes. And the black woman is standing on the ground. And, you know, he can see over the wall. You know, that's a good visual representation of what privilege is. And that's why we need affirmative action and policies like that. I mean, think about how much wealthier and better and in a much better space the country would be if people were just treated fairly. You know, we wouldn't perhaps be having a Gini coefficient of the highest in the world, because there would be more wealth, people would have more land, and people would just be happier. You know, I think, yeah, it's just, there's so much to deal with, but we can't have that type of mentality where, you know, a guy thinks that, yeah, it's survival of the fittest. We need to help one another. We're not people who should just work for the rest of our lives and work for a big boss and earn pittance. You know, a good example of that are these Amazon workers. You know, I mean, like a guy like Jeff Bezos can go up to space, and Bernie Sanders is tweeting about the fact that Amazon like employees can't afford medical aid.
And then Jeff Bezos then, I don't know if it was ironically or tongue in cheek, then thanking his workers that they got into space. But Sean in Weinberg, thank you so much for your call. Really appreciate it. Keep them coming in. 021-446-0567.
Cape Talk. Cape Talk. The open line. Call 021-446-0567.
We reflect now on the conversations that we've had over the 2 hours and 33 minutes that we've been together here on the morning review. So I open up the phone lines, 021-446-0567, and Sam has taken that opportunity. Good morning, Sam in Strand. How are you?
I'm very well, Lester, and yourself?
I'm okay, my man. What's on your mind?
Lester, I've got a whole lot. You've really got me going this morning. First of all, the unemployment. Let's get rid of the union, because they never took a pay cut during when we had the lockdowns and all the rest of it. The people below them They couldn't care whether they starved to death, but they never set a foot out to help these people.
They did settle for 1.3%, and it's more than nothing, but it's 1.3%. With the rate of inflation, that's almost negative.
Give me a break, Lester. Let's open the factories that we had here in Cape Town. All those factories that I can remember way back in the apartheid era when we had millions of factories here, clothing factories. Bring all those back so the people can keep the minimum wage. Keep the minimum wage so that they cannot go below that and have a decent minimum wage, and anything above that is a bonus. But what I'm saying to you now is the unions are the thorn in our side. They have stopped this country going forward. They've done nothing for this country. Secondly, to go to these people that have been tweeting and retweeting, if Judah Zani was in Dubai, and he told that government, the people there, that they must burn and pillage carefully, he would have been killed outright, without even a thought. Mm. He would have been taken out quietly, and nobody would have been known the better. Thirdly, I wonder if Alan Perrin would help me with my birds that have been killed by the cats in my yard on a daily basis. They use my garden as a toilet. They kill all the birds in my garden, all the lizards. So I'm now trying to think now, will he come and assist me with that?
Sam, but you can't equate, you know, the cats coming for your birds. And I'm very empathetic to you, and it's not nice. And I know people who breed and they invest in birds. But that's a bit different from someone slaughtering a cat.
No, it's a cat is not a dog. You cannot keep a cat in the yard. A dog, you can put a fence around and he stays in your yard. But a cat, you can't. They wander all over. They kill people. I've lost expensive birds here.
I know.
I've called animal people out here. They've come. They talk to the woman that's got 60, 70 cats in the yard. She says, oh, all my cats are in my yard. Mm-hmm. They do not stay in her yard.
Sam, thank you so much for those three excellent points. Really appreciate
it.
Have a very good day. Sam, the in Strand. I think it's Ross in Thornton. Hi, Ross.
Hi, hello, Lester. Yeah, I was just getting very amused by hearing your last caller. I thought he had some very good ideas there, but I'm an animal lover. Oh, no, I wasn't phoning on that, but I phoned in because I was very keen on the way in which you were expressing your opinions and other people's opinions on uniforms. Because to me, if you put that uniform on, then you are a different person. You are swearing allegiance to whatever that army is doing. Mm-hmm. And it's very important to be smart and to do embrace it properly. Otherwise, don't wear a uniform. Don't do it. And unfortunately, in our police force and in our army, there are people who could perhaps be in supporting roles, but they shouldn't be wearing uniform, because the uniform is a different thing. Mm-hmm. I got into some fairly minor trouble with our local contingent of riflemen when I saw in our local newspaper.
Rifle people, Ross.
Hey?
Rifle people.
Rifle people. Yes, of course. Sorry, I'm being very sexist. So the rifle people were marching and were looking very smart, but their commanding officer on the parade ground was dressed, you won't believe this, in a tracksuit. And I took him to task because I remember our sergeant major would have gone mad about that. You can't do that sort of thing. But he was very uppity and said it was an army issue. Tracksuit.
Has the role of military not change? It's a completely globalist world at the moment. Of course, there are still wars and conflicts that happen, but shouldn't we then also change how we see military defense structures away from a krachdadach, militaristic, macho sort of identity?
Okay. I get what you're saying, and I understand what you're saying, Lester. But the thing is, when you put on a uniform, there's nothing derogatory that one can say about being smart. That's not being macho, it's being smart and taking pride. There's nothing macho, there's nothing, what you say, my Afrikaans is nicht so goed nie. But you know, the old regime, the type of thing. No. being smart, being proud of your uniform is important, and it doesn't have to carry all that negativity with it. So I think I used to polish my boots till I could see my eyes in them, then I could actually see my reflection in them. It's a matter of pride, and if you don't look after your body, it's also a matter of you shouldn't be in uniform. Sorry, the uniform is there for a specific purpose, and that is for people of action. Then let the person go behind a desk, wear an overall or something, but they shouldn't be wearing uniform.
Ross, appreciate the call. Thank you so much. Let's go to Paul in Durbanville. How are you doing?
Good news.
I'm okay. You want to talk about, reflect on the taxi violence?
Well, no, not the taxi violence. Obviously, it's connected. I have to pick my guys up at Belleville Station because obviously there are no taxis. So we mask and we open our windows half and I put the heater on full in the car and we all sort of cold on top and hot underneath. But basically, driving to Belleville, Twitricker Road, I go past many, for this whole week now, I've gone past many, many Golden Arrow buses. All the windows are closed. The sweat and breathing of these people, their breath, is literally streaking and running down the insides of those windows. That is just a hot box for COVID. And I don't understand how Golden Arrow, with all sort of clear conscience, can let that happen. Why haven't they either taken out a front and a back small piece of glass to allow through flow or ventilated these buses properly? It's ridiculous. Even if you're wearing a mask, there's absolutely no way you're not going to get COVID in that bus if somebody's got it even mildly.
Look, as a person who spent my youth and my early adult life, you know, traveling by with in a very, very full third class train carriage, it takes.
Yeah.
You could open, as a singular person, I would open that window and say, look, and sort of, I would note, we need some ventilation here, but then all of a sudden you have a bus or you have a train carriage full of cold and miserable people because they're all traveling together on this cramped third class carriage for all of them to say, close the window. I mean, what do you do?
I understand that, Lisa, but then they must put, I'm sure those buses have heaters in them. I mean, a normal vehicle has a heater in it, a standard vehicle. So surely you could put the heater on full, like I do, and then open the window just to get that breeze. Yes, so then wear a beanie or something, knowing that you're going to get into this bus and you're going to be cold, well, mildly cold. But I mean, I know it's uncomfortable and I know that's a problem. But I mean, even the lady I spoke to who put me on to you, who answers your phone, she's anxious about going home every night and coming to work every morning because of the bus.
Yeah.
So Golden Arrow got to make a plan. They either put bigger heaters in the bus and they make the windows open, or they are just they're adding fuel to the fire of this pandemic. That's all I can say.
Paul, really appreciate it. Gosh, I remember the time when I would travel in the third class train carriage, and time before masks, it was a totally different time, different universe, and full carriages, and people would cough, not even covering their mouths, and what a different world we live in. 021-446-0567. I wouldn't be found dead in a confined space like a train carriage. And of course, some people and many people have no other choice. And I have the privilege of being a single occupant in my car now. But gosh, I can't even look at concerts, music concerts anymore, just because of the sheer number of people. It's going to take a while once we are through with this pandemic for me to get back to a sense of what we know before this. I still stay far away from crowds and groups and any enclosed spaces. But it is the open line, 021-446-0567. You can give us a call of whatever is on your mind, or to respond or to react to some of the conversations we've already had.
Cape Talk, the open line. Call 021-446-0567.
But let's go to some of your voice notes now here on the open line, where we use this last half hour just to reflect on some of the conversations that that we've had on the open line. 021-446-0567, or drop me a WhatsApp, 072-567-1567. Let's have a listen.
Hello, Lester. This is a topic that I've been really like, you know, those things that you think about when you're alone. And our soldiers, Jesus. I was in Rwanda recently and I saw the soldiers in Rwanda. Just from the physical appearance of those soldiers. This one guy looked like he could chase me for 5 days straight. And you know that they're fierce. And I don't get that when I see our soldiers in SA. How do we get to a point where we have a military that has really, you know, looked the part?
Good morning. Just my thoughts on the overweight people in the military. Let's just put the safety aspect aside, where they must protect us, and look at the financial aspect. We know that they get good medical benefits, and that medical benefit is paid by the taxpayer. And so if you've got overweight people, we know that leads to diabetes and all other sorts of health problems. And it's a taxpayer that is paying for that in the end of the day, ultimately. So there's also a financial aspect of people that's actually unfit for the military. Yaku from Peru.
Bye, danke, Yaku. I'm also wary of this label. You know, this is the social media nickname for SA military. They're called Mabenas. Yeah, they're called Mabenas. It's all because of a meme, a video one day, and this, I don't know what was wrong. This guy was trying to jump. Thanks, Johannes. He was trying to jump over. It was one of these exercise drills, and his surname was Mabena. And the instructor on the video, shouted, "Hey, Mabena." And that has since become sort of, I think it's an unhelpful stereotype. And yes, we can make fun, but does it build the confidence of the people who serve us? I don't know. I don't think so. Yes, deal with the issues and say, look, we probably don't want to see fat military officials. And that example of Rwanda is a very good example. But I sometimes think the stereotypes are unhelpful. But let's go to Rita in Tableview. Good morning.
Morning, Lester. That comment made by the chap, the caller, Matthew, regarding
Matthew in Constantia.
Extreme Darwinism, survival of the fittest. He himself will be made redundant by robots, artificial intelligence, etc. And because robots do it better than people. Mm. So the productivity will be amazing. 24/7, robots do it. They don't need sleep. They don't need to go. So there'll be massive production. But who are the users of that? It needs to be used and bought by somebody. But if none of those people have jobs, who's going to buy the massive, you know, the amount of products that are being produced cheaply?
We are already seeing the mechanization of labor-intensive work here in the Western Cape. The fruit industry, farmers can get tractors and robots and all these other implementations to entirely mechanize that that process. But then at the same time, in industrialized countries as well, as you're saying, artificial intelligence, computer learning also then makes professional people redundant.
Correct.
Therefore, a basic income grant is not just something that we should just look at for poor and struggling people. In the future, we're probably going to look at it in, you know, a working population in general.
Correct. We need to move away from the word grant. Mm. And the current terminology is universal basic income. Because, you know, there will be so many people that robots will have put out of work simply because they can do the job better than people. So in Scandinavia, they're running. They've been running it probably for 3 years now with 2,000 or 3,000 people, giving them UBI. To see what do people do when they don't have to work? Mm. Do they become creative? Do they become criminals? This is the first time in history that we've had to consider what do people do if they don't have to work? If they don't have to work, they can still pay rent. They can still feed their families. They can still buy clothes because someone's got to buy all those things that are being made by the robot.
Definitely. Rita in Tableview, really appreciate your comment and your call. Len in Tableview, how are you doing? Well, let me try that again. Len in Tableview, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing well, thanks. I'm doing well. Lester, just a little comment. At the last count, and this was published in Parliament, we had over 400 generals or people of general rank. That's obviously admirals and air marshals and things like that in the South African Defence Force. We have over 190 of these fellows in the SAPs. During the Bush War, when we had a far bigger requirement, we had just over 20 generals in the whole of the South African Defence Force. Now, all this adds up to people who really and truly expect others to do their work. Oh, don't worry, I won't do it. Someone else will do it. Plus, what about the salaries, the perks, etc., etc.? Little wonder our Navy, our Air Force, and our Army are under-budgeted. Our pilots are having troubles keeping, maintaining the hours required of them to retain their licenses. The Navy are battling to maintain their obligation in terms of the Mozambique Operation Copper, I think it
is. That's right. And as much as we have this very bad reflection of this bad image of the South African National Defence Force, they are severely underfunded. And as you said, simply just for maintaining its obligations to SADC and other, you know, international cooperation agreements, and that we are seeing year on year a depletion of the budget to the South African National Defence Force.
That, of course, raises another question. SADC, AU, United Nations all pay us very, very richly per day, per person who is deployed for their use. So we've got people all over Africa. The individual gets somewhere in the region of approximately $10 a day as danger pay for their services. No one has been able to explain where the income, which I understand is somewhere between $500 and $1,000 a day per person, where that income goes. It is not credited to the South African Defence Force budget. So where is it going?
Important point, important comment there. Lendi in Tableview, thank you so much. Keep your calls, your messages coming in, 0214460567. Let's reflect on some of the voice notes that have come in, or a few that we want to get through before the end of the show.